Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Author Eke. Today, I have the very elusive, the very hidden, the one and only Jeff Circle and the dossier.
Oh, the dossier.
And which is an amazing thing, Jeff. And I thank you for letting me be part of just a masterful piece of ingenuity. And I appreciate it. So tell us about yourself, Jeff, and let's just get into it.
Yeah, no, thanks, Travis. I really appreciate you having me on. And as we were talking earlier and we've talked in the past, it's so good to have these connections, not just with the military community and the former veterans who are doing things in their life. Now, this gives us all a chance and the opportunity to come back together and you know, experience our lives in a new way that we didn't have before. So your dossier was fantastic.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, because man, the things you've done and the things that I got to learn through that, you know, the Sergeant Morales Club, your experiences in Germany, some of the crazy things you did in West and East Berlin, maybe, you know, neat stuff. So yeah, I'm Jeff Circle, like you said, and I'm a veteran like you. And this is how we came together through this thing I do called the dossier. And it's just a collection of questions and answers from veteran writers who are out there knocking it out. And I expanded that to include all kinds of writers, like Jack Stewart behind me, a bunch of other writers who are doing some really great things. And the dossier has grown. And I just celebrated our 50th classified writer's dossier release with Tori Eldridge. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
I have to tell you, so when I got out of the Army, I got into sales. Technical sales. And I, you know, you'd be in meetings with a bunch of people, and I always a snippet of I was in the Army or my dad was in the Air Force or something. And 9 times out of 10, there was somebody else in that group of technology, you know, evangelists or people wanting to look at technology to buy that were in the military or their son or daughter was. And then there's that instant connection that you can make with that person, no matter how difference in age or what you did. It's all about that we all had the same experience of leaving home and knowing absolutely nobody. And then 5 minutes later, you have your best friend right next to you.
Yeah.
So that, you build those bonds, and I always connected with a person, not because I wanted an angle, but because I wanted to be able to relate to him. And to me, that's what I found very. And then when I hired folks, you could add a 4-year degree from Harvard, but if you came in there after 4 years of being a Spec 4 in the Army and you'd got an honorable discharge and you did right and you knew your stuff, sorry, Harvard guy, you gotta look elsewhere.
No, you're right. That's the kind of bond that lasts forever. And I'm still in contact with people I went to basic training with in 1987. And that is it's irreplaceable. And it's the neat thing for me that this has helped with is the transition. Because when I got out, it was, what do you mean I don't have a green ID card anymore? I don't feel like I belong to a community. Mm-hmm. And who can I count on? Who's got my back?
Yeah,
you're used to being on post. And so now with what I'm doing with the dossier, reaching out to people like you and getting to know you and so many others, it really helps, you know, with mentally, with the connection. Having come back from Afghanistan in 2019, I moved from Fort Bragg, where, you know, that's the tight community, to I'm in Northwest Ohio now, and we don't have anybody here. I'm a lifetime member of the VFW, but you know, I don't go very often.
Right.
But so this is a great way to keep in touch and to keep those common bonds and understanding. And you're right, it helps out in the community. When you're talking to somebody, like some of what I've done in security and having been a police officer, if you find that common thread, hey, you were a vet too, then it changes everything.
Oh, I tell you, so, you know, when I've gotten pulled over, I always pull out, I've had an ID card my entire life, whether it's been green or beige or now blue, I think. I've had one my entire life. And so, you know, I'll get pulled over and I'll pull out my driver's license. It says disabled veteran on it, but then I'll pull out my ID card. And I remember one time I got pulled over by a state trooper in Texas on I-90, George Bush Tollway. I was going probably 85. Yeah. And the speed limit was, I don't even think was 70 at the time. So I got pulled over, you know, real nice to the guy. I get my driver's license, ID card. He goes back, says, hey, you know, let me go back and check. You know, you're speeding, you know, so-and-so, you're like 25 miles over. I'm going to go back. Let me run your plates and everything. Comes back later. So we start talking. He goes, so what'd you do in the Army? I go, I was a scout, 19 Delta. And he goes, my brother's a 19 Delta. So we start talking. He goes, I'm going to give you a warning, you know, just slow down. I mean, that ID card is better than a pair of augmentation. It's crazy.
It's crazy, Travis. And, you know, you bring up a point that's really important today in society. And that's the fact that we all have a lot more in common with each other than we
have.
And if we just focused on those things, and I'm not saying, you know, you take advantage of that to get out of a ticket,
no.
You can have such a better life interacting with people around you when you find those common things and you don't have to look very hard.
No. I remember I put so you're talking about relationships. So when I started writing my first book, about 2 years ago, I had the premise. I was in a business meeting, as boring as ever, sales meeting. What are you going to do? Oh, yeah, we're going to make our number. Yay. And I had an idea. So I took a break. I said, I'm going to call a friend of mine. So the first person I call is my old platoon leader. He was my platoon leader in 1991. What? And I have known him. We have kept in contact the time. I was doing some work in Herndon, Virginia. He was stationed at the Pentagon. I went over to his place. We went out for dinner, stayed at his house. He was getting his doctoral at Texas A&M, drove down there, had lunch with him and his wife. You know, I've kept in contact the entire time. He retired a colonel. He was assistant commandant in Army War College when he retired. And, but I ran it by him. I said, you know, and it's hard for me to call him by his first name. I almost call him Lieutenant all the time. It's no disrespect. It's just what I know, you know? So, I don't know if I've ever called him colonel, but, you know, so I talked, I said, hey, I want to run this by you. He said, great premise. So now I'm writing a World War I historical fiction.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I ran it by him, the premise, and he was like, that's pretty interesting. Then I reached out to SMU here in Dallas, and I'm kind of working with a guy that does presidential historian. Oh. But he's also very involved in a POW MIA program for the Pentagon.
Okay.
Very involved. So to me, it's like, you know, you're building these bonds, but you're right. I put a picture on Facebook one time back 1977 of a guy. I was on top of 113. I was 17 years old.
Yep.
And one of my friends on the Facebook says, hey, Travis, I remember that picture. This is a guy that I knew in basic training in 1976.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I've aged a tad. I haven't gotten any smarter, but
we're still here. But you know, I still feel like I could hop onto a track. You know,
But you've written a book, right, Jeff, or a couple, or is that am I correct in assuming that?
No, you. It's yes and no. I've finished a few drafts and had the first book completely professionally edited by a really good dude named Ryan Steck. He's the Real Book Spy. His book is right here. Lethal Range. He's a good dude.
Excellent.
Worked together for a few years and got it done, got it ready, had some interest, had a lot of requests for fulls, people looking at it. And in the meantime, while Ryan was editing and we were getting all the query process together, I had to keep writing. I wrote book two and going through it, get back to book one, start promoting that and trying to get it out there. Book two ended up being a lot better than book one.
Oh, wow.
And so now I'm retooling book two to make it book one.
Excellent.
You know, put in some time, even this morning before you and I got on, it's come together. I really like it. And
excellent. You know, I can't wait to read that thing.
Thank you. I was talking to Nick Petrie in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and he wrote three books before his first book got published. And the more people I talk to when I do the dossier, I find that that's the case. Mm-hmm. You know, they've written books and then one hit you know, so that's where, and I think it's a smart move to go back and make book two, book one. And it's about, it's an espionage thriller, but it's not a traditional military thriller. Right. So, you know, my people are doing some crazy things and I love it. And when I talk to other authors and I hear them talk about their characters, I know I'm on the right track when they say something and my response is, yes, I get that.
Oh, okay.
I'm the same way. Exactly. Those are my people, you know? So, so that's where I'm at in the process. I already have book three plotted out. I have a first draft that I put on the shelf. I'm going to let that simmer for a while. Mm-hmm. Really focused on book two now.
So do you think the military really shaped how you, number one, think about your writing, the discipline about when to write, when can you write? Like in the military, you do things when you have the opportunity to do things.
Right.
You don't, you know, typically, oh, I'm going to plan out and do this all day. Like you may look like it on the schedule, but it ain't going to happen. So, you know, you take 10 minutes to write maybe a couple sentences or something I want to put in the book. So how's the military shaped you in your writing or what you write about or how you write?
You know, the military shaped more of my content than it did my discipline. And mm-hmm. you're exactly right. It's like Mike Tyson said, you can go into having a fight with a plan until you get punched in the face. Then everything changes. So one of the great credos of the Marines, and forgive me, Marines, is, you know, overdapt and overcome and adapt and overcome. So no matter what's going on, you've got to know where you're going and you're going to have to get there circuitously in most cases. So the military for me has really been more of an influence on my global worldview because it took me to five continents. I've lived overseas in, you know, half a dozen countries. I love living in Germany, Italy, Korea. I've taken a dozen trips to Afghanistan. Worked over there until, you know, 2019 and, you know, still managed a contract until Kabul fell. And that opened up a whole new world of understanding to me. It's like what we were talking about earlier with getting to know people and realizing that regardless of how different we may look and sound, or what we might eat or where we might live, we can find commonality. And I remember that from Desert Storm. After Desert Storm had started to settle down and we were all kind of going through the mess, we ran into all of these other militaries, all from the coalition, these, you know, dozens of other countries were there. And every time we would run into somebody, we would have one person who could speak their language, you know, whether it was whatever. But for the most part, we would just be standing and try to pantomime. And so we got into this thing where I would exchange.
I got a lot of dates in Germany by doing that, by the way, not being able to say
pantomiming. Oh, man. Germany was fantastic. A lot of Germany.
My wife's German. Yeah, I love it.
Whole nother story. Yeah. Miss it. Miss it over there. Oh, yeah. Love to get back. No, military was good, but I've always been disciplined. I remember after I got out of the Army and went to work for a phone company called MCI. It was the kind of like before.
Oh, I knew they were. They're based out of Mississippi. They bought half of EDS.
They did. Bernie Ebers and all that from Mississippi. Yes. I had just been out a few years, and I was supervising a bay of people who took phone calls and who made phone calls. And my desk was in the middle of this big square. Mine was in the middle. And everyone would turn around in between calls and they would look and we'd talk and they would look at my desk and they would say, how are you so organized? Why are you so tidy? Did the military make you that way? And I said, no, actually, it didn't. No. And then that part of the military was really easy for me. It was just kind of natural.
Yeah. So you brought up a good point. When I was my first unit, when I got out of AIT and everything, was Delta Troop 1st and 4th Cav, Air Cav, Fort Riley, Kansas.
Oh,
and we just had a young lieutenant, infantry guy, just got out of Ranger school. Well, you know, I was 18 years old. And he goes, oh, hey, volunteered us to go to Aggressor Rangers down in Florida, Eglin. Auxiliary field trip 6 or 9, one of those two, swamp phase of Ranger school. So the whole platoon flew down there from Fort Riley. We got there, it was in November. And he was like, okay, you know, the only thing we're not going to do is jump out of the airplanes. He goes, we're going to do everything, every class the Rangers have, we're going to go, these Ranger cadets, we're going to go to reptile classes, the Yellow River, the RB 15s, everything. And I remember before that, having to do land navigation as a scout, that's one of your fundamental things is land navigation. Sure. So it's easy, you know, you're in a field or woods navigating per se. Uh-huh. But, and you shoot at azimuth, walk to that azimuth, you know, intermediate points. But then you get down in the swamp, right? You can't do that. You're in patrols at night and the swamp is, well, it's unforgiving. So you want to go, you know, 5 clicks or something, 10 clicks or whatever, you got to get there and you shoot a straight line azimuth. But you can't get there, then that's like life, right? You try to shoot a straight line azimuth, but something's going to come in your way, an obstacle or an objection. So what do? You shoot a 90 degree, right? And then you do it. Or when you're running, you know you got to run 2.5 miles. But if you look and pick out something every 100, 200 meters, move to that point, get there, continue. By the time you're done, it's the same as navigating stuff. And you know, people, you know, oh, I've got these obstacles, all these things. Here's what the Army taught me is an obstacle. One, you go around it. You take it out, right? You mark it and somebody else is going to come take it out. But you don't stop there because when you stop there, you're in a kill sack, right? And that's the objection of an obstacle is to probably kill you eventually.
Right.
So, you know, in business, right? You mark the op. I come back. I'm going to get you later. I know you're going to be a pain. So I'm going to come back and get you. Right now, I'm moving forward. Or what's the difference between an objection and an obstacle, right? And in the business world, and that military taught me how to deal with those, right? It also taught me how to deal with when I got out, if I had to go talk to a CEO or, whoever. I was not in the one iota intimidated by you. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Because I had talked to, I've got my ass chewed by sergeant majors.
Yep.
You know, I've known generals. I've known colonels. You're not going to poke me in the eye with a stick. I mean, you're not going to do that, right? So I think that's what the military helps. But again, but you build those bonds too. And then I think when you're not intimidated by people, you build their respect.
You nailed it when you started to talk about dealing with other people of higher status. And I worked at brigade headquarters for most of my Army career. So I was always standing next to the colonel. You know, we're in the talk together and the colonel's like, hey, S2, you know, intel, what's the deal? And I was the NCOIC at night and, you know, running the show for the intel section. He just, you know, became, hey, Colonel Sylvester. And then he became a 3-star, you know, after that. And so now, when you get out, I worked at U.S. Army Europe headquarters. Mm. My boss was a retired colonel, and we reported to the 1-star. And so my office was right next to the briefing room. We're always giving intel updates and briefings to, you know, the chief of staff, you know, the 1-star. And so when you get out, what that does for you is it takes the nervousness out of dealing with a CEO, but you have the respect that you've learned from the military. So it's the perfect combination of power and respect to help you deal with these people. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've learned to go along with that sense is these retired veterans. And an example is General Tata, Anthony Tata.
I've read a lot of his books. I love his books.
Oh, and he's got the Phalanx Code's coming out soon. We're doing a dossier on him, but I met him for the first time in person at VoucherCon in San Diego this last September. Mm. And he walks in and I'm sitting at this big round table with a lot of other retired, you know, colonels and, you know, sergeant majors and everybody. You know, Steve Stratton's there, Jack Stewart's there.
I'm going to be in Nashville, by the way.
There you go. We'll look for
you. I'll be there.
General Tata walks up and I'm like, hey, sir, you know, it's just so weird to see him and everyone's calling him Tony. And he's just so cool, you know, but that's what the military does. It teaches you respect, but without the fear because of what you've been, because you've been through some stuff.
Yeah. I remember I was in 37 Cav, 3rd Infantry Division, Schweinfurt. Yeah. And our squadron commander was Colonel Shinseki.
Oh, wow.
Colonel Shinseki.
Yeah. Yeah, he went on.
Chief of Staff of the Army.
Yeah.
And so, and through the years, then he left and he came back. He was ADC of 3rd ID, and his office was in Schweinfurt. So I stopped. I'm going to go see, you know, I've known him. I've talked to him before. He's a colonel. Brigadier General. So I went there to talk to him. He always had me in his office. No problem. Always let me in. No problem. And then one day we were at a gunnery in Vielflecken, and the scouts were manning some roadblocks and something for the tanks. And his Humvee drives by with a star on it, drives by. I salute him, you know, stops. And the guys in my platoon are like, Sergeant Davis is fixing to get an ass chewing.
So he comes.
He stops. I walk towards him. He gets out and walks to me. I salute him and everything. And then we just shake hands. You know, we bullshit probably for 10 or 15 minutes.
Wow.
Then later on, I'm the assistant operations sergeant, S3 for 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment. And he is a 3-corps commander.
Wow.
So he comes in and sees me, stops everything, talks to me. People are freaking out, you know. And then, you know, but I've known, you know, the entire time he's a real nice guy. We kept in contact a little bit when I got out and he got out and everything. But again, another thing you learn in the military is tact, right? That's looking at somebody that's made the worst decision in the world, and you tell them that. And by the time you get to telling them that, they think they're the best thing since peanut butter. You know, if you come up with an idea and they go, I just had a great idea. And the same one you had, you go, man, that's a great idea. Let's do it. I mean, so you know how to play on, you know how to be diplomatic if you have to be.
Well, you've got to encourage people and you got to keep them motivated. And that is the other thing with delivering feedback. You know, you go through, you know, PLDC and BNOC, ANOC, and all courses for leadership. You've got to learn right off the bat that you have to bring everyone together. Mm-hmm. You've got to bring them along. You've got to advance and push them further than you. Instead of pushing them down, you point out their deficiencies as opportunities to become better, because that's the goal. It's not to knock you down now. Yeah.
Right.
There's always a goal.
Yeah. That's like, when I said, okay, I'm going to try for the Star Morales board club, right? It's a long process. It's boards, sergeant majors, and all this sort of stuff. And the reason I did it, because I wanted to show my platoon, because we didn't have anybody in the platoon, almost in the battalion, that was Morales member. In a tank battalion. And I said, I'm going to do it because I'm going to show my soldiers it can be done.
Right.
So when I got done, I had a couple more soldiers do it. And one of the soldiers that was in my platoon was Sergeant Major Bardicky, who was a 1st Cav Sergeant Major, just retired recently.
Bardicky, he owes me money.
Bardicky. So
stripes.
So I'm, you know, he was a specialist in my platoon and become, you know, 1st Cav Sergeant Major, but the impact you can have, even remote or minute, on somebody's career. But then I also found out, and I hate when people just give negative comments, right? Or they have a problem, but they never have a solution.
Yes.
I was always taught that, if I'm going to ream your ass, but I'm going to come out with something that's going to be positive at the end, because I'm going to say something. Or if I say there's a problem, if I don't have what I think is a potential solution, I'm not going to bring it up, because all you're doing is wasting my time.
You know, that was something that really helped me later on as a military contractor, because after 9/11, I ended up being a cop. I wanted to get back involved. So I was a cop for a while. And then I had an opportunity to work for US Army Africa in Vicenza, Italy. All of a sudden,
beautiful place.
Oh yeah. You know, you're back into it. And you want to come in and, you know, show your knowledge and, you know, be an asset, and you want to point things out, but you can't just point things out without a solution.
Yes.
You got to identify the vulnerability, but then you've got to have the fix. And if you can do that, that's great. And then if you can teach your people to do that, and, you know, with being a Star Morales Club and the leadership and developing the NCOs underneath you and the younger officers that you work with, don't just be the smarty pants who, you know, identifies the problem and then run away. neener doesn't get it done. You know, neener, and oh, hey, here's the fix it. that you get your people to do that for you, that makes your job so much easier.
Yeah, you're always looking. Okay, if I was a squad leader, right? I'm looking for somebody in my squad that's going to take my job. And I want to nurture that. If I'm a section sergeant, if I'm a platoon sergeant, whatever. And you're always looking for somebody that you want them to succeed because you want them to have your job. Because when they succeed, then I succeed. Right. It's a byproduct. Where it's a lot different in corporate world is if somebody sees somebody being a highly motivated or go-getter, they're like, oh, he's trying to get my job. And to me, when I was in the corporate world, I was like, yay.
Right.
Come and get it.
Right. That was the hardest thing for me to adapt to when I was at MCI. And the adjustment factor was really difficult. I was there for 5 years after the Army, and it wasn't that team environment that you're talking about. It's every person for themselves, and you've got to scrap and claw because, yeah, that other person is going to take your job, but it's... That's not the environment where it's good. Yeah, we weren't all there to help each other succeed. And that was really frustrating. And I was a little lost for a while. And I ended up leaving after 5 years and I punched out and I moved to the Virgin Islands and worked on a dive boat for a year. And just got,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, I need to reset. I need to reset and figure this out. And that's where I really got into writing as a profession because I thought, hey, I can write travel articles down here. I can sit on And so, yeah, submitted some dive articles to, Skin Diver and Dive Magazine and things like that. And, Condé Nast. So I can hit all these islands around here and start writing. And then I came back and, like I said, shortly after that 9/11 happened. And I'm like, I've really got to put my big boy pants back on and, get back
involved.
Make a contribution. So
how did the dossier come about? Well, because that is so, it's out there, right? That's out there. So how did you figure it out? Or how'd you do it now? How'd you start? And because you're really building momentum now. I mean, I see on Twitter all the time, or X, whatever you want to call it, building this momentum. And people are like, hey, I want to be a part of it. I reached out, hey, Jeff, I want to be on this thing, right? I want to be part of this. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I went to Thriller Fest in June and I met Tim Hendricks. T.R. Hendricks wrote a really cool book called The Instructor, and he's a former armor guy.
As a matter of fact, I think I am talking to him later today.
Are you serious?
I think so. Oh, I know I'm interviewing him.
Show Tim. Tell Tim that, he signed this book over to me and I read it. And, I'm like, oh, dude, this is fantastic. And so I thought, I want to help get the word out. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And I would turn to someone and I'd be like, have you met this guy? Have you read this girl's book? And that was my way of entering into the writing community at Thriller Fest, was to get to know these people and introduce them to each other. And I, on the Myers-Briggs personality assessment, I'm an INFJ, which means I'm an introvert and I'm judgy. But
I think I'm the complete opposite.
but in that environment, it was so welcoming. And that's what the thriller community is known for. Mystery, crime, thriller, and suspense writers, we all want each other to succeed. And I really felt that when I was at Thriller Fest. And so I went home and I thought, what else can I do? Because now all of a sudden I'm removed from that concentrated group of writers who were all there together doing something writing related. And now I'm back in Northwest Ohio by myself. And like, I want to keep this going. And so I reached out to Tim Hendricks, reached out to some other writers. And I said, hey, look, I want to do something to help continue this momentum from Thriller Fest. So it just doesn't die off. And when we all meet together again later in the next year, let's do an interview. So I took my military intelligence background because I was an intelligence analyst and I'm used to, I worked in.
My son was a 35 Golf. My son's a 35 linguist? Geospatial.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm used to working in SCIFs and constantly around classified information where it's just all laying out the way to open storage. And so I thought, well, I can take the information I get from these writers and I can put them into a pseudo classified file And so I started searching for images, and I downloaded the image, the primary image that I use for my profiles. I slapped a headshot on there and kind of put top secret on the top and bottom markings, and then just started to tell the story about the writer. And so I thought I would fill those data points in with a 5-question interview process. And so it was, I didn't want to be boring and normal, because when you look at all these other author interviews that are in the New Yorker or whatever, they're pretty standard. Hey, where do you get your ideas? You know, or how did you come up with that character? Or, you know, where is your character headed next? Tell me about whatever your protagonist is. And I didn't want to do that. Those data points are important and they're good, but I wanted to be funny and I wanted to make it interesting. And I thought a way to make it interesting was to be comical, but still get some really good nuggets of information about the author that a general reader would find interesting, but also the writing community. I was doing this for our writing community of Thriller Fest and BoucherCon. And so in July, August, I really started hitting it. And I would just reach out to these different people, some of who I had met at Thriller Fest, some who I hadn't. But I was listening to a podcast. It was a Thriller Zone with Dave Temple. He was interviewing Matthew Quirk, who wrote The Night Agent, a huge hit on Netflix. And he wrote The Inside Threat and a bunch of other stuff, Hour of the Assassin. And he said something on that podcast that's always stuck with me. He said, us writers work in an isolated environment where it's just us and the keyboard, and we're just kind of happy when someone reaches out to us and says, hey. And so I did. I contacted him and immediately responded. And then I contacted you. And so at this point, like I said, we're over 50. This week we celebrated the 50th dossier. And I think it's kind of helped some of these writers keep their momentum for their books going. Because as you know, you release a book, then it's out in the world, and then what? Well, you got to keep promoting, and you've got to hustle, and you've got to work. It's a business, and you've got to make sales, and you've got to make impressions, and use every opportunity to get the word out there about who you are and what you're doing. And as readers, because we're all readers here, love these books. When we find things about Travis Davis or Terrence McCauley or Jack Stewart, we're like, oh, wow, that's really neat. I want to read another book, or I want to find out more about him, or what Circle did Polygraph in Afghanistan, or Travis Davis is like, you know, cruising down the wall in East Berlin. What's up? You know, those kinds of things are interesting because it gives you a lot more credibility in your writing. And when someone picks up a book, they know you're the real deal. And so that's where the dossier started. That's how I got going. And when I hit BoucherCon in September in San Diego, I walked in and I didn't expect this. I started to recognize all these people. I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, I've interviewed him. I've interviewed him. I've interviewed him.
Oh, that's cool. So
I walked in and I just held up my name tag and I waved. I'm like, hi. And they're like, that's Jeff Circle. He's with the dossier.
I don't think you're introverted. Inverted. I don't think you're introverted. Maybe.
that's a common thing that people think about introverts. They think introverts are quiet and they're isolated, but they're not. They love to get out and they love to engage and they want to discuss and have fun. Yep. But then they're like, okay, I'm done.
I gotta go.
And they go down to their basement speakeasy, 14 by 10, and they sit and they're happy being alone too. So that's where I am.
Yeah, I think a lot. I read a lot, and then now because of what I'm writing, I'm reading a lot of history. I'm reading researches, on the internet and all sorts of books. I'm just reading everything about World War I that I can.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make it historically factual in some places.
Yes.
Right. But then the story around it is, I haven't told anybody the title yet or anything.
Okay.
I have it. I've already got the website.
You're rolling.
It's coming quick. I've started writing 2.5 weeks ago and I've got 20,000 words, 22,000 words.
Yeah, you got to get that first draft out, get that down on the page, and then you can fix it and make it great. I know it's not World War One, but with yesterday, or not yesterday, but with December 7th being just a few days ago, The Last of the Seven by Stephen Hartoff.
Oh, huh.
Have you had him on?
No, I need to get him.
You've got to get him. This guy, he's the real deal, too. And he wrote a book about World War II. And I know it's not World War One, but
no, that's fine. Yeah, I love
World War II. You're reading a lot of history of that, you know, that era. Just a phenomenal book and a super guy. Get him on. I'll introduce you guys. Stephen Hartoff.
Yeah, what I found interesting is you read about there's Churchill, there's Roosevelt, there's Patton, there's MacArthur, there's Hermann Goering, there's Hitler. There's all these people in 1917, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same characters, Truman, same characters in 1940s.
Yeah.
That it's just like an extension of what they didn't maybe feel like they accomplished. That they wanted to accomplish in the 40s.
Right, right. And, you know, it's kind of the same with writers, too. And the more I've gotten to know some of these writers, you realize that, they've been writing for 20 years. You look at Mark Greene. Mark Greene worked with Tom Clancy on stuff. A lot of these writers have been doing things for so long, and they started off with somebody else, or they wrote with, you know, under this other, not a pseudonym, but
pen name.
Yeah, pen name, and all kinds of things, and now they're huge. And it's like, oh man, wow, how'd you get so big? You're an overnight success. You look at Jack Carr's career, and he's been surrounded by books, and he's been doing writing from far longer than just The Terminalist. Yeah, that was his first year, big book, but you know, it's been a lifetime of reading and writing. It's the same of these guys in the 40s for World War II. Go back to your era that you're doing a book on right now. Yeah, they were all still there doing the same thing.
Yeah, doing the same thing. Yeah, that's amazing. So where do you think the dossier is going to go? You want to try to get maybe everybody to write like a short story and put it in a book, or, you know, like a printed dossier, or what's your thing on that?
I hate to say this to you, an established podcaster, because, you know, you're already in the podcast pool, but the natural thing would be to take the written interviews and put them on a podcast. To have that video interaction, because you can lose some things in tone when you see an answer. Right. But the way I've structured some of my questions, they're designed to elicit a humorous response and really show the character and the inner workings of the writer. And that's what I really wanted to get across. We talk, you know, technical writing steps. Every dossier has one similar question. All the rest are individually curated based on my research of the individual. But the one thing that is consistent about the writing technique is, tell me about where you write and whether or not you can listen to music, or it's got to be quiet, or you can do it on a train. Like you said, any 5 minutes I get, you know, I can bang out a paragraph or maybe edit something. I'm constantly working on it. So I want to help communicate what works for some writers so that can help other writers learn, hey, they've got this process that, you know, that works for them. But the other thing is, who are they really? You know, what's really inside? Because that's what people want. You know, I mean, they want to know what's Brad Pitt really like, or, you know, Robin Williams, how he was so funny. What was he really like, you know, when he's not on? And I try to do that with my writers. You know, they've written great books. What are they really like? And that's what some of those questions are made to bring out. And then their past, you know, they don't have a chance to talk about their past in the little bit in the back, you get two paragraphs to talk about your past. Well, tell me in the dossier. So I want to continue to do the dossier. Mm. And because there are so many great writers out there and I'm learning from all of them. That's an advantage for me. I get to establish this relationship with them. I go places or I see things or on Twitter or you know, X or Facebook or Instagram, like, I know that person. Oh, so great. They're doing well. And I can help spread the word on that. So I'm going to continue to build the dossier, but it would be ideal if I had the time to do what you
Well, whatever I can do to help you in that endeavor, you please let me know. I'd be more than happy to assist you in that.
You know all the tricks. You've been doing this for a long time. How many Author Ek podcast interviews have you had?
I've done, I started, then I took a little break. I've done over probably 60.
Wow.
And I have 46 up.
Is yeah. How much of an effort it is on your part, because this will last for less than an hour, but then you put another, hour or two into editing and promoting, and we had to set it up. There's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah, I enjoy it, because when I started writing, I didn't know anything about it. When you struck on something, marketing, writing a book, every book is a business, and you need to have a business plan.
Yes.
For that particular book, so I would, highly recommend that. I would be more than happy to help anybody.
Thanks.
People can contact me at author@travisdavis.com. They can, contact you. We're going to get your contact information here in a second. But I think it's a very tight-knit community in the writing community. And I found out that everybody's willing to help you, because I'm not taking your readers. You're not taking my readers. There's enough for everybody, because people read multiple books a year. Right.
Yeah, I have so many. I'm starting to get more and more just sent to me. Hey, will you read my book? Glenn Dwyer has a book coming out on Monday. FX Reagan has a book coming out next week. And I get these sent to me, and I'm like, these are great. There are so many good writers out there, so many good books. Only so many get to like the top level where they're household names, but there's so much good writing out there. And when you get to enjoy that, and then from my perspective and yours, getting to talk to these people is such a treat, because you realize they're just regular people and they end up being friends. And that's really nice being so isolated. Let's see where I am here in Ohio and where you are.
Yep.
It's great. So thanks for the help.
Yeah. So Jeff, where can everybody get a hold of you?
I am on the four major social media platforms of, X, Facebook, Instagram, and I'm on Threads too. JeffCircle.com is the website, or thewritersdossier.com. Thewritersdossier.com will take you right to all 50 dossiers.
Okay.
And about a month ago, I redesigned the website so it's a little easier to navigate, because after it started to grow, it got to be too much.
Oh, yeah.
Octopus. So I had to redo it, and I think it looks really nice now. I love it. You just click on any author you want. It's their headshot, their profile, just like yours is on there. Click on that, and it takes you right to the dossier page for that individual, and lists the interview questions that were asked, and then links. And this is the big thing about why I'm doing what I'm doing: links to your website, links to your book, links to your Amazon author page, your book cover, with a clickable link that will take you right to the Amazon buy here. Because I sincerely do mean, and I follow it up, indeed, the position that I have of wanting to promote other authors and get the word out about what they're doing and celebrate them for their hard work, because they're so much further than I am. And I've enjoyed their work. And I know, I've bought a lot of these books, and I want to pay these people back. And by helping other people find out about them. So that's where the dossier is. You can find me all over. So follow me. And we'll get a newsletter out eventually, but that's not important.
I'm telling myself I'm going to do that for a year, and I haven't done it yet. I think I will with this historical fiction, because I want to, how I came up with some of the, the information and more about the process behind writing an historical fiction. Book.
That's really neat. Historical fiction. I've got a book. What did I get? I got one recently, because I haven't read a lot of historical fiction. But once you do, it's like a warm blanket, because you're reading it and you're like, I know this part of history.
Yeah.
And then you interject an interesting story in there. You're like, I get it. We're going in this direction. But that setting is still something familiar. And that's what readers are looking for. They're looking for something familiar that they're familiar with, but different. And you, if you're creative enough to put a cool story in there, then that's a great combination.
Well, I'll make sure you get one of the drafts.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Real quick too. The other thing you asked about the dossier is I'm continuing to do the dossier, but I'm also expanding. I started something for writers who don't have books published yet, who are in the query process, who are in the draft process, but they're promising writers. I've met many of them. We're all kind of in the same boat. And I wanted to do something for them too, because I don't have a book that I can promote for them. Right. So I started a thing called the watch list, and that's on the
website. I saw that. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. Because there are some great people out there who just haven't gotten discovered yet. Either they're on submission and their books may be picked up, but they're still good people and they're still trying hard and they've written a good story, because they'll send me drafts and think, what do you think of this? Like, well, I want to get this, I want to help promote you so that when your book does come out, you have a platform already. So you've got some momentum going into it. So the watch list is kind of like the terrorist watch list. It's the writer's watch list. So it's the same small kind of graphic. It's a different color to differentiate from the dossier. But instead of doing a 5-question interview process, which they will earn once they get a book out, it's just a quick little hit on who they are, what their name is, and how to contact them and how to follow them on social media. So that's the watch list. And that's really fun. So I've had a lot of fun with that.
And that's how we're going to close.
Cool.
So, Jeff, it has been a pleasure talking today. I wish you the most success.
Thank you.
And thanks for your service. And I know all us fellow veterans out there really appreciate what you're doing for the community. And even the folks that are supporting the community, I want to thank them, because a lot of that is maybe through your efforts of what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Travis. It was great to be on. And I encourage everyone to contact me if you feel free. Get on social media. I will definitely respond.
He'll get back in touch with you.
I'm looking forward to your stuff too, man. I can't wait. So hit me up with that website once it goes live.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Thanks.
All right. That was good.
And we're out. All right.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. So I think all your stuff is uploading. I'm using what they call Riverside, which is pretty cool, because no matter how I see your picture, it's going to be clear because.